Hello and welcome to this week's Total Rugby League show, and joining me here at League Express Towers on a Wednesday afternoon, we're joined once again by Mr. Martin Sadler.
Hi.
And Paulie Alex Davies is here, everybody.
Hello, I've got a bit of a sexy growl going on tonight.
That's right. And returning is Mr. Aaron Bauer.
Hello, mate.
So, Aaron, just before we kick the show off, I do have to highlight something that's happened on iTunes recently.
Right.
The latest review, because we do read them, dear listener, on the iTunes store of this very podcast, Shabba left this review just a couple of weeks ago. 5 stars, so thank you, Shabba. The new top rugby league cast, if Aaron Bauer becomes permanent, it would be the dream team of journos.
There you go.
So there we go. So we listen to your feedback, Shabba.
And we've binned Matthew Shaw.
Yeah, Matthew Shaw.
He's gone.
Matthew Shaw isn't here. He's with his agent.
He's
with his agent discussing his future. Anyway.
So it's over to Aaron.
Yeah, absolutely. So hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's show. This week, we'll be talking the Magic Weekend, the Challenge Cup, and later, we'll also be talking the Coventry Bears and expansion, as we'll be joined by author Dave Musson, who has a new book out on the 20th anniversary of the League One club. But before all of that, it's to Liverpool we go, and to Anfield, a difficult subject for me as a Mancunian, and last weekend's Magic Weekend. Now, Martin, I'll come to you first, because you've written a column about it in the paper this week. What was your general take on it before we get to on the pitch matters?
Well, I wasn't there. I was in the League Express office, so I was... My experience of it was on television rather than live. Aaron can talk about the live event. But I thought it came across well. I thought the crowd was not tremendous on either day, but it was enough to give it a real sense of atmosphere on television, I thought. Obviously, the lower tiers of the stadium were the ones that were filled rather than the higher ones. So, and you know, the games themselves, there were, you know, on Sunday, there were two games that ended with a 2-point margin. You know, the games on Saturday were quite interesting. I mean, the real shock of the weekend, of course, I think, was Huddersfield scoring 55 against Hull. I mean, what a team to support Hull must be. You just don't know what you're going to get with them, do you? But no, I thought the event was good. Whether it'll go back to Liverpool or not, I mean, I think the only thing that's a bit unfortunate from my point of view is I don't think there were many Liverpool fans there, but Aaron, maybe you can tell us that there were.
I've got no idea. No, I don't know. I would assume not, because the RFL in recent years at Newcastle have been very quick to shout about the fact that X amount of tickets came from the North East. We haven't heard anything like that this year, so I suspect not. It was okay. It was all right. It wasn't my favourite Magic Weekend. It wasn't the worst one I've been to. I think, for someone who was working there, it was pretty good, because there's nothing around Anfield, so everyone's more inclined to stay in the stadium. Ergo, it stays full. I think if I was a fan, probably wouldn't have enjoyed it, because, again, Anfield, not the nicest place in the world to be. You know, there's not a lot going on around it. You know, they tried, they put a bit of a fan zone on, and there was some stuff happening on the stage, but I think what people want is they want to be able to, and I'm going to use Newcastle as the example because it is the best. It's the best type of venue for Magic Weekend. They want somewhere where they can fall out of the stadium. If they see a game, they see, I don't know, Hull Huddersfield, they think, I'm not really bothered about this, let's go for a drink, then let's come back for the last game. You can't do that at Anfield. So I think the stadium, the games score quite high, you know, an 8, 9 out of 10. But I would imagine the experience as a fan probably leaves some question marks over whether it goes back to Liverpool.
I mean, Alex, the thing that Newcastle's got is that they've got a local club who did a lot of marketing themselves for the Magic Weekend, whereas Liverpool didn't really have that. So it was kind of like a rugby league festival where the north of England just comes to Liverpool rather than anyone from Liverpool gets
involved. Yeah, and of course Newcastle always put the game on the day before, don't they, as part of it, which was always really good. But I think Aaron touched on it there. The party atmosphere at Newcastle was perhaps difficult to replicate Anfield. Whenever I went as a fan, I always went to and saw every game. But I know a lot of fans dip in and dip out, and that's what Newcastle offered, but Anfield perhaps didn't. So maybe more people watched more games, but I don't know whether that's better for Magic Weekend or not.
I think the other thing about the Liverpool weekend is that I mean, the overall crowd was down, but of course, at Newcastle, more people stay for the 2 days.
Yeah, more weekend tickets.
So you can have the same number of people involved, but because they're there for 2 days, they actually count as a bigger crowd.
Well, yeah, and you know, if you're going to be honest about it, I was told the rough figures leading up to it, it was 60% day tickets, 40% weekend for Newcastle last year. This year it was 90% day, 10% sure. weekend. Yeah. So actually, in terms of bums on seats, you might have actually had more people coming through, because if you buy a weekend, basically if you buy a weekend ticket, you're classed as two on the attendance, whether you come or not. You've bought a weekend ticket, so they assume you're coming both days. So actually, you might have had more people coming through the turnstiles. But I think there's a bit of an obsession with the number. I don't think the number is the bottom line, the baseline thing over whether it's a success. I think the game needs to get a grip on what is Magic. What are we doing with Magic?
Absolutely. What's its function? What does it seek to do?
That was going to be my question to you.
It was originally held in 2007 in Cardiff, and the object was to be evangelical, wasn't it? Was to get people in South Wales, or at least, you know, a significant number of people in South Wales, to understand the attraction of rugby league and to come on board, and hopefully then to generate, you know, clubs in South Wales and so on. I don't know how much that objective was achieved back in those days, but then it went to Edinburgh. And to be quite frank about it, we've not really done much missionary work in those places since the Magic Weekend was taken away from them. Now it just seems to be a commercial venture. They went to Liverpool because they got a financial deal from the local authority. Well, if that's what you do, I don't see the point in it, really.
Newcastle's the only place where there's any sort of legacy and any sort of, like, you'd say the Thunder are stronger because of Magic.
I would think
they'd agree with you, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, like Alex said, they got 4,000.
There's a flourishing community league up there now as well, which is tremendous.
Strange that we have Edinburgh in it.
Well, yes, yeah, but you know,
but there are no, yeah. Well, there are some rumoured plans for Liverpool, aren't there? But I'd highly doubt they'll come off.
Liverpool does seem, I mean, of all the cities in England, Liverpool is the city that seems most resistant to rugby league. Actually, you know, they're so obsessed by soccer that, you know, and it's nothing else, is there?
So far, I don't know. You know, call me Yorkshire bias, whatever. It doesn't sit comfortably with me that for some clubs it's on the doorstep and for some clubs it's 200 miles. Try being an OFC fan this weekend.
I'll try and balance this out and come from a Lancashire perspective. Yeah. It's miles away from the city centre.
Yeah, it is. But
I mean, the city centre is superb. It pains me to say this, it really is.
Liverpool is a fantastic city.
Well, the thing is, if you go a few years down the line and Magic is still a thing, there's a potential of going to Everton because they're going to have a stadium on the docks, aren't they?
Yes.
If all goes to plan. I mean, you can imagine that. That would be one hell of an event. That would be interesting, if it does
stay in Liverpool, surely there has to be a legacy aspect to this. I mean, I know Leyland Warriors were at Blackpool and Charlie Panthers were at Magic Weekend. That's still miles away from Blackpool and from Liverpool. And these events, Alex, you would expect to have some legacy left for the game in those towns and cities.
I think that's what measures the success for an event is the legacy behind it. We've all seen the Olympics for 2012 and Newcastle as a Magic event. I think that did leave a legacy. And if you're going to do it in Liverpool or Anfield or at Everton or wherever, you can't just do it once. Maybe do it three or four times to build it up and build that legacy.
I think it will be at Liverpool again. I don't think it's ever been anywhere once and moved, has it? I don't think.
No, Edinburgh.
Not twice.
It was.
And my 21st birthday.
I mean, we've got a readers' poll in League Express this week that's on the Total RL website, so people listening to this can cast a vote. And I think it's true to say that Newcastle is leading the way. We've given a number of alternative venues, including Barcelona, incidentally. but I think the majority of people at the moment are voting for Newcastle, going back to Newcastle. So that's an interesting one, isn't it?
It is an interesting one.
You know, people are voting in that way.
I mean, just go back to the community aspect. You've got Stanley Park there on the doorstep. Surely that was an opportunity in the build-up to this, because, you know, it's a Liverpool City Council thing as well. Super League could have turned to the council and said to them, where's your troubled areas, where's your poor communities, yeah, kind of thing. Let's get them involved in rugby league and have some kind of event take place.
Well, having
place
said that,
beforehand.
they did use, I think, Stanley Park for the learning disability games.
That was the big positive
of the
weekend.
It really was.
And, you know, the last few years we've seen physical disability rugby league and learning disability rugby league becoming much more important. And I think that's just an illustration of how inclusive rugby league is, and it's a great thing. And you know, some of that was shown on television on the Super League show, in fact, on Monday night. And it's really quite heartwarming to see those kids, you know, who obviously do suffer from various disabilities, just enjoying themselves so much. It's tremendous to see, and you feel proud of rugby league for being the sport that's giving them the chance to do that.
Absolutely. Where did Dublin come in your poll? Did you do Dublin?
I'm not sure that we did do Dublin.
That'd be the dream.
I'm not sure that we did.
It really would.
Wow, would it?
Yeah, it really would. It's not too far out from the city centre, is it?
Viva Stadium.
Yeah.
No, the places we chose were Barcelona, Cardiff, Edinburgh, Liverpool, London, Manchester and Newcastle.
Matthew's jumped on this idea of having a big rugby league festival at the Etihad, because obviously there's the athletic stadium where Manchester Rangers played, there's the women's stadium just across the road, and there's the main stadium as well. So you could have all three divisions covered.
You could, but then we're getting rid of the Bash, aren't we? And I thought the Bash was the best thing since sliced bread.
And it is.
almost like he was doing that to get a few retweets.
He's not here to defend himself, Matthew, but I think he would need to defend himself if he were here.
Let's move on then, and let's talk about on-the-pitch matters, because as you all rightly said, there were some good games which took place over the weekend. St Helens heading into the Challenge Cup this weekend, they look unstoppable, Alex.
Well, Cass certainly weren't good enough to stop them. Yeah. I think there was a real gap there, and I think, to be honest, Cass did pretty well to only lose by 20, which perhaps shows we're not a bad side, really, but we're just not good enough to compete with Saints at the moment, and I don't think teams are.
But
two late tries for Castleford that massaged the scoreline. Mm.
But St Helens' last three knockout games, pretty ordinary against Huddersfield. Some would say fortunate to get through against Huddersfield.
Second gear.
Lost the playoff semi-final and lost the Challenge Cup semi-final. So while they are great, and I think they are the best team in the comp by a country mile at the minute, I think there is a question mark over them in knockout rugby. I think, you know, they're due a performance in a big knockout game. They're due really putting someone to the sword. And, you know,
is that coming on Saturday against Wakefield?
It could do. Wakefield are struggling a little bit at the minute. I think Danny Brough is going to be back, which they probably would have won that game on Sunday at Magic if Danny Brough would have played.
Yeah.
But they are due, and that's what I would say. A fearful way.
Well, I've actually written an article for the St Helens programme for this game, and I've just looked back to a few previous encounters between Wakefield and Saints in the Challenge Cup in the past, and they've actually had some really great games, you know. There's a history of marvellous games between the two clubs, and it goes back right back to 1960. This is for Wakefield fans. In 1960, St Helens were roaring ahead at the top of the table, just as they are now, and in the first round of the Cup they played Wakefield at home, and Wakefield went over there and beat them 15 points to 10 with an inspired performance. Having said that, in 1966 Wakefield were the favourites for the Cup, and Saints came to Wakefield and beat them 10-0 with, you know, brilliant Tommy Bishop try, which I actually remember. I'm old enough to remember it, sadly. And then in 1979, Challenge Cup semi-final at Headingley, Wakefield beat St Helens 9-7 with a last-minute try by the winger Andy Fletcher when Saints thought they'd snatched the game. And, you know, so there have been some thrilling games between Saints and Wakefield, and if this game can live up to any of those, it's going to be tremendous.
And I think Saints showed at the weekend that they're the masters at doing all the little things that no one else sees. Yeah. John Wilkin was on Sky Sports, and he touched on Morgan Knowles being that person that does it. But I think it's not just Knowles, it's the entire team. Their line speed is brilliant, their pressure on the kickers, the speed of the ruck. That's what they're the best at, and that's why they're winning all these games.
I think Morgan Knowles has really come to prominence this year. And, you know, it must be a decent bet for a sport.
Well, that's what they're saying. They're saying he's taking Sean O'Loughlin's role in the Great Britain side at loose forward.
what can Wakefield do to stop them? Because Wakefield obviously go into this game with a defeat against Catalan Dragons.
Well, Cass, what they did at the start, they started fairly well. They completed the sets, they mounted some pressure, but they weren't able to break through. And Saints were buoyed by that and went the length of the field and scored off the next set. So I think Wakefield will have to take the chances. Not try and score off every play. Build pressure.
Yeah, they've got to stay in the game.
Well, they won't have Fifita, will they? Will they?
Probably not.
And he'd be the one you'd be trying to stop Walmsley. If you stop Walmsley, you go quite a long way to stopping Saints. But that's a tough task.
We think Danny Brough will definitely
be
back.
I think he will play. Yeah. The game was over at Magic after half an hour, realistically, on Sunday. Mm. I think if Wakefield can get it to half time, only 6-8 points in it, I think they give themselves a chance, like I say, with Brough back. I think it's very difficult to completely rule them out. I just think, Saints are due a big performance on TV in a knockout game. It could come this weekend.
Well, so Wakefield, perhaps. Who knows?
Yeah, but for everything Saints are doing, they've only been beaten once, haven't they?
Let's talk about Hull then. As Martin said, they must be a laugh to follow. They're taking on Catalans on Thursday. Catalans against Wakefield. I was really happy with Catalans. I thought they were really good. Yeah. But it is Hull at home.
I think I wrongly bagged Catalans a few weeks ago, saying they can't win in England and stuff like that.
They stay over a lot.
They have done this week.
And they are doing this week. Yeah, Martin's right.
and last time they did that, they won, didn't they?
Yeah, this is all about Hull, this game. This is all about whether you're going to get your archetypal response from Alessi after a drubbing. If I think they'll win Hull, actually.
Are they saving their best performances for the Challenge Cup?
You tell me. I think Lee Radford would love to know the answer to that question, because even he, in the press conference on Saturday, was quite crestfallen. He was just at a loss to explain what on earth is going on with this team.
It seems like they take a lot of effort to win the game. It's a bit warranting a brilliant win. It took a lot out of them, and then they just
When they go behind, wow. Do they collapse?
There's something wrong with them psychologically, isn't there? I think, to collapse in that way seems almost unnatural, really. You know, I mean, Huddersfield played really well, didn't they? Let's admit that. And Huddersfield look a great team when they're playing the way they did.
Yeah, they do.
On Saturday. But Hull shouldn't be losing to anybody by that score.
I'd be intrigued to know, and I don't think you'd ever get the answer to this unless you're a psychologist, I'd be intrigued to know what so many players out of contract is doing in that camp on a day-to-day basis.
Well, I wrote a piece saying that Hull played as though they'd all been told they weren't going to be
retained. You think they'd be playing for deals, the rule that you generally assume is that they play better when they're playing for contracts.
It's the thing with Hull, if they lose heavily. Yeah, their points difference is -87. They've won more games than they've lost.
They've lost three games by over 50 points, haven't they?
I'm honestly, without copping out, I'm with Lee Radford. I just don't have a clue what Hull are all about, and I'm fortunate that I'm not getting paid to sort it out, because I dread to think what Lee Radford's thinking. He must be having some sleepless nights.
Just to touch upon Huddersfield, just because obviously they're not playing this weekend, but we do have to mention it was pretty good from them
Are now the most successful club at Magic Weekends. They're top of the Magic Weekend table.
That's mad.
Aren't they?
Yeah.
They overtook Wigan, because Wigan lost at the weekend. Huddersfield are now the top dogs, and that's remarkable, isn't it?
2 points off the top five. I saw a tweet yesterday. They've got some very winnable fixtures coming up. They're out of the cup, which isn't, you always want to be in the cup. But if you're in this mix for the five, these weeks off could be crucial.
Well, yeah, because Huddersfield play Cass next, don't they?
Yeah, they
both
do.
Both
have a week off. And it's what I think it comes back to what we said a few weeks ago. If you can guarantee that Lee Gasco will play every game between now and the end of the season,
that's a big ask.
Yeah, it is, and it's what's plagued his career, isn't it? I, with no disrespect to Huddersfield, I think if he was capable of playing 30 times a season, he'd be playing for a better club than Huddersfield. But they're a chance. All of a sudden, 2 points off the top five. I think that any fears of them being dragged into something at the bottom, I'm sure we'll touch on that. I think their performances like Saturday show that they'll be just too good.
And have we any idea when Leroy Cudjoe is going to come back?
No.
I mean, that's a key player who they're still missing.
It is.
And if and when he comes back...
Is he going to be back for the running?
Well, he was supposed to be back a while ago, wasn't he?
He was. We've not really heard much about his injury.
One thing you'd say about Huddersfield, as I frantically turn the page to read the team sheet... Darno McIntosh, Jermaine McGilvery, Jake Wardle, Innes Senior, Oliver Russell, Matty English, I suppose you could say Joe Wardle, Aaron Murphy, Cruz Leeming, Michael Lawrence, and then Sam Hewitt and Lewis Senior also in the 19, all produced by Huddersfield. They're going the right way as a
They've
club.
They've transformed themselves in
recent Andy Kelly's years. Doing Andy Kelly, Luke Robinson, even Chris Thorman deserves a bit of credit for what he did before he left.
Yeah, yeah.
They're going the right way as a club. And we just mentioned Cudjoe there, who's to come back in. Russell and Gaskell look like a great halfback pairing.
Russell has really come to the fore, hasn't he, in the last few games. He's really come to the fore.
Good on Huddersfield, you because know, it seems
I assume Matt Frawley is injured, is he, at the moment?
Not sure. I think Russell might be getting picked over him, but what you know, Huddersfield traditionally have thrown money, good money after bad, haven't they? You know, and they look like they're snapping that a little bit now, or you know, the emergence of so many youngsters is hopefully convincing them, changing their philosophy a little bit, because there are guys like Frawley, I know Uart is injured, Ike Hefo can't get in the team, so they look like they're steadily moving in the right direction, and I think Wolford's a great coach. You know, I've said before that they need to get out of this cycle of sacking a coach mid-season and then having another coach inherit players he didn't want. Wolford needs a couple of years to build his team. I think if he can get them, you know, if they can finish mid-table this year, they'll be well positioned to go next year.
I think they've got a chance of getting into fifth.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, if they play like that.
But it seems like no one wants those players.
Carlans do.
That's very true. Is Catalan seemed the only one that's making kind of real push towards them?
Well, Catalan's travel to Hull this weekend on Thursday night. That's the Thursday night game, I'll tell you, in the Challenge Cup. Sticking with Hull, let's talk about Hull KR. They're taking on Warrington on Friday. A much needed 2 points against Salford.
Yeah. They looked very good in the first half, but obviously Salford came right back at them and they were a bit lucky to get away with it in the end.
What do we make of Salford, just before we move on to Hull
KR? Well, they seem to lose by 2 points an awful lot, don't they? Losing by 2 points against Saints, I mean, that was a fantastic performance they gave against St Helens.
Yeah.
But then they seem to be the archetypal team that plays at the level of their opponents. And, you know, they did against Hull KR, didn't they? They, you know, made a number of errors and Hull KR was smart enough to capitalise.
They've got a points difference of, it's opposite what Alex is saying about Hull. They've got a points difference of 56 and they've lost more than they've won. Mm. So they don't get beat. They very rarely get beat up. My concerns about Salford are depth. I know they're doing very well with injuries and they're managing to keep everyone fit, but I'd still be amazed if they could do that over a 29-week period. I think they're going to get caught at some point, and then I think that's where you might see a little bit of a slide. I don't want to disrespect them and, you know, try and end their season prematurely, but I think the five will be just beyond them this year.
I think so too, yeah.
Too good to go down. Definitely. They'll be in that sort of 7th to 10th bracket.
No danger of relegation. No. Incidentally, it was a really nice gesture of Jackson Hastings to present that jersey with Jansen Turgut's name also on it to Jansen's girlfriend Stephanie, I think she was called. Yeah. I thought that was a real highlight of the Magic Weekend,
absolutely.
Actually. I think the way that people have reacted to Jansen's sad accident is really, you're really very positive. And I really would like to just say on here now that I hope he pulls through and ultimately might even be able to get back to playing the game again.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just to talk about Hull KR for a second or two, they're obviously taking on Warrington. Strong words from the chairman this week with regards to, and that's kind of put a bit of a new story there ahead of the team.
It's not the first
really.
Time that Neil Hudgell has done that, actually. He's had a go at the disciplinary system previously. The trouble is, without looking at it, you know, in a very detailed way, it's hard to know precisely the merit of his argument, really, isn't it?
I don't think anyone's got all the facts, have they, in the public domain?
No, I wouldn't like to say he's either right or wrong, because I don't know enough about the situation he's talking about.
I mean, is it difficult for us as people who, you know, follow the sport and report on the sport, when really those kind of things should be, there's a channel for that kind of complaint, isn't there? Or would you rather it was put out in the open like this?
Well, the thing is, if people want to put it in the open, they will do. And, you know,
is it constructive?
I'm not sure it is, really, because it tends to draw down a sort of criticism of the disciplinary process that I'm not sure that process deserves. Because, it's a hell of a task to go through all those videos, picking out you know, examples of foul play and so on, and then deciding what action to take in relation to each of them. It's something that I just wouldn't want to do. I just couldn't imagine doing it.
You won't get me on that disciplinary panel.
No, I mean, you know, so, and I think it's headed up by Paul Cullen.
It is, yeah.
Who was, you know, a pretty regular visitor to the disciplinary panel himself in his playing days. So, you know, Paul Cullen knows his stuff, I think. But, I mean, having said that, they're bound at times to make decisions that some people find...
Don't
agree with.
You can't please everyone.
No. There's always, you know, two sides look at a tackle and see it differently. Yeah. You know, it'll always be the case, won't it?
Hull KR on the pitch then. Is there a chance against Warrington this weekend?
Well, Warrington seem to be... They're obviously a little bit ahead of everyone else, but they're not winning by a lot at the moment. They're being challenged. And I think Hull KR, while they can produce it for 40 maybe, it's 50 minutes of a game, they're not producing it for the full 80. And I think if they're to beat Warrington, they'll have to do that.
Warrington obviously going to this game having beaten Wigan for the second time.
Third time
in...
This season.
Well, I was going to say, a couple of
second
weeks.
Second time in a month.
Yeah. I mean... Would you put it past Hull KR to beat Warrington?
No, because...
At home?
No, because of that reason, at home, Craven Park. It's a long trip for Warrington, and as Alex said, I think there are frailties in Warrington, particularly at fullback now Ratchford's gone long-term. But I just think a good side would have put Salford away before half-time at Magic on Sunday. There was a moment when OKR dropped the ball over, I think it was over the line, was it Lynette or Garbutt dropped the ball, and that would have made it 20-0, and I think a decent team would have really got on a roll against Salford there. Rovers tried their hardest to lose it in the second half. So while they are a chance, and you know, I'm not trying to sell the cup for the sake of it, they do have a chance, but Warrington goes favourites, and that's probably the easiest one to predict on paper.
But I think the prize of a semi-final spot for OKR
They showed it three, four years ago, didn't they, when they got to the final, that they, you know, nothing's impossible in the cup. I think they were probably a worse team then than they are now. So who knows?
But let's face it, we do look to be heading for Warrington v Saints finals, both, don't we, in both the Challenge Cup and Grand Final. Obviously, you don't know.
Yeah, but we were. Saints were bankers to get to both finals this time last year, weren't they? And they got to neither. So
I think they'll have learned from that.
Yeah, they look a better team, but again, you know, until they put a performance in knockout rugby, I think the jury stays out on them.
Now, we'll talk about the final quarter-final berth in a second or two, but just to finish the results off of the Magic weekend, the game that pretty much I think everyone was looking at the weekend was Leeds against London, and Leeds just did it.
Well,
am I wrong in saying just?
Oh, no, Jesus Christ, just. I've seen some wild celebrations with Leeds Rhinos, winning grand finals, jumping up and down Old Trafford and Wembley. I'm telling you now, the reaction from that bench and those players when the full-time out went on Saturday, Sunday was pretty similar to something I've seen when they've won grand finals. They knew how big that game was. And I know Richard Agar said afterwards, there's a long way to go, nothing's decided. Tell you what, if we'd have been looking at this table and Leeds cut adrift at the bottom, they'd have been in big trouble.
I'll tell you something as well. London Broncos were hopeless for the first 20 minutes of that game. Mm-hmm. And Leeds actually should have had a bigger lead by that stage.
They should,
But
they let them get back into
it. They did get back into it. And actually, you know, in one sense, London's tries were probably better created than Leeds' tries were.
Martin touched on it there. At the start, Leeds looked way too good for London. They really did. They looked just too much speed about what they were doing.
Yeah.
But then you get a player like Jordan Abdul for London, who was very rocks and diamonds on the day, kicking out on the full, scoring two tries. You can't make it up, really. And to be honest, I think Leeds were lucky in the end to get away with it, because it looked like they just pressed the self-destruct button.
I'm sure part of the celebration was that knowledge that Leeds had that when they played at Headingley, London snatched it late on with two tries. They got two tries in the last 10 minutes. You know,
it was a big psychological thing for Leeds, wasn't it, to close it out.
Survive it.
But look how mad this table is. Leeds have been dreadful. There's three wins off the top five. I'm not saying they aren't going to make the top five, for anyone who gets carried away by that. But what I'm saying is, the context of the table, it's just utterly ridiculous.
Yeah.
As for just on London, they've got 13 games left.
How many do they need to win?
I think they need to be smart about it now. They need to pick and choose the games they're going for.
Because they were doing that already,
yeah,
weren't they?
So, Saints come to Ealing, don't worry about it. Don't do it. Don't push it. Hull KR, and then if it's Hull KR the next week, that's the one you go for. You know, almost give yourself 2 weeks to prepare for games as opposed to one. Pick and choose the games. I think if they get another four, they've got a chance.
And it's interesting what Aaron says there about picking and choosing games. London doing it at the bottom, Saints are doing it at the top, aren't they?
Well, they weren't last season, but they are.
That's the thing is, I think they have learned from it, particularly with the use of James River, because we all know how important he is to them, and he didn't play against Salford. They got away with it. They got the 2 points, then they brought them back in against Cass and produced a better performance.
Return to the Challenge Cup in a second, but just one final thought for the Magic weekend. Aaron, you went to Super League HQ in the swanky
Northern Quarter.
I like the Northern Quarter. I get all my coats from there. And LPs. That's right, Grandad. Call it LPs. What is the take on the Magic weekend? Onwards and upwards at Liverpool? Do you think that's the baseline now? And
well,
next season
they signed a 3-year deal with the sponsors, so it's here for another 2 years at the very least. Like I say, it's never been it's never been somewhere for 1 year and then moved. So I think it's a pretty safe bet it's going back to Liverpool next year, rightly or wrongly. If it was me, I'd take it back to Newcastle because I just think that's where it belongs. And I reckon you get a massive spike from people who didn't get the Newcastle experience this year, but history dictates that it will stay at the same venue for at least 2 years, so book your hotels to Liverpool now before they become £600 a night. Don't do it on the same weekend as the Liverpool Marathon.
No.
Stupid.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Okey-dokey. And we don't know whether what the deal is that they've signed at Liverpool, do we?
No.
We don't know whether it's got an option for,
it's
so
ambiguous.
On.
Well, one last Challenge Cup tie to talk about. Bradford against Halifax. On Sunday, back on the BBC. Going into this game, both teams in great form. Batley beating Halifax and Featherstone beating Bradford. What do you think?
Yeah, they've both been thinking about this for a fortnight, haven't they? I can guarantee you that. Especially Bradford, who seemingly thought they were on a pre-season camp on Sunday rather than glorious Pitland Featherstone. It's so tough to call. Bradford should be favourites because A, they're at home, B, a large put almost all of the squad are full time again now. But Halifax did a number on them at the Bash. Halifax really did a number on them. And that was a strong Bradford team. So I think.
But that augurs well for this game, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Halifax will probably bring a fair number of fans.
Yeah. It's only 10 minutes down the road. Yeah. It's going to be a great advert for the Championship live on terrestrial TV. It's going to be.
What crowd are we talking about here?
Oh, I'd say about 7,000 or 8,000.
Yeah, I think 8,000 is probably where we are.
But it's so interesting that the BBC have picked this game, isn't it? When they could have picked.
I don't know. I think
two all Super League.
This was the tie, wasn't it?
I think what Bradford did in the last round meant that Bradford were always going to be on the telly again because the BBC like to follow the story, don't they?
Yeah. Understandably.
And Bradford are the story, and then if they win again, whoever wins, to the best of our knowledge, whoever wins on Sunday is one win away from becoming the first second division team to ever reach the Challenge Cup final, which is just a story that is mind blowing. Really, you wouldn't give them much of a chance, whichever of the other six they faced in the semis. But it should be a great advert for the Championship. I would probably put Bradford in there just by a nose, but Halifax, wow. If there's one game the people and the players of Halifax are up for, it's Bradford away. They will be bang up for this.
What happens if Hull KR get through? Because Hull KR obviously just got past Lee, didn't they, in the previous round?
Oh, right, I see what you're going with this.
There is a potential, isn't there?
You're saying a Bradford or Halifax for Hull KR semi-final.
At home.
It's at Bolton.
Oh, it's at Bolton, isn't it? Subject to
final
delegation. What would happen there if a Bradford or Halifax...
That would be a... Now, that
avoided
would be
a St Helens or a Catalan Dragons or Hull.
Even if they got Hull. If they got Hull on a bad day, they'd beat them by 50, wouldn't they? All KR are the only team, aren't they, that you're thinking, well, if we get them...
They could be vulnerable.
Yeah, if we get them, we could really get them. Maybe Wakefield, maybe... No, it's a different Wakefield team now, aren't they, to a
not
few
with
years
Bruffy.
Ago.
Not
yeah,
with
yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think it's all about just enjoying the spectacle that it's going to be this weekend as a neutral, because it's, I tell you what, it's going to be brutal. They're going to be knocking lumps out of each other.
And if they don't, if Halifax or Bradford do end up getting Hull KR at the semi-final, the mentality of Hull KR has to be positive. It has to be positive. You can't be looking over your shoulder at this championship tide coming after you. You've got to be up for it, as if it's a normal Super League game. You're playing a Super League opposition, even though they are championship. You've got to be up for it in that respect. You can't be thinking of them as a championship.
I've got to say, though, I can't see Hull KR beating Warrington this week, because... No. Apart from anything else, I think Hull KR have got to be more bothered about escaping the relegation, rather than focusing on the cup.
And if you're a Hull KR fan listening to this, the only reason why I picked on you for a cup upset is just because that's happened in the lower half of the Super League. Have been beaten by Championship sides this season.
Absolutely.
Speaking of the Championship, let's talk about the Championship. Wins for Toronto. It was a big weekend, actually, for the top three moving away from the middle pack. Toronto beating Sheffield, York beating Widnes, and Toulouse beating Lee. There were big wins as well down the bottom end. Barrow beating Rochdale. And what a finish at Haywood Road for Swinton Lions against Dewsbury. I was there.
How good.
Blimey. Dewsbury get with about 2 minutes to go, I think, they get a field goal to win it. And then Swinton scores straight from the kickoff. Yeah. It was amazing.
And they've got some enthusiastic fans at Swinton, haven't they?
And a good owner in Andy Maisie as well. Yeah. A very good owner.
Just to touch upon League One as well, there was Whitehaven won the top of the table clash with London, Doncaster beat West Wales, Hunslet beat Newcastle, which was a great result at Newcastle, and Oldham dominated Keighley as well at
Good
Cooper
decision
Park.
To sack Craig Lingard.
Well, you weren't on the show last week. I mean,
mad. Is it Phil Ladd? Phil Ladd has got the gig, hasn't he? I'm led to believe.
Directing their rugby operations, I believe, or something to that effect.
It's 1995.
Are you surprised our big names not gone in there already? Because surely there would be a plan. I'm just going to throw a name out there. I don't know, someone like Leon Price or Richard Marshall. Yeah.
Leon Price, certainly. It would be perfect for him. Still lives in Bradford, so it's a local job. And whether they are going to get a young coach to work under Phil Larder, they've got to. Surely Phil Larder can't be doing it day to day. I don't mean to disrespect Phil Larder, but
he's knocking on.
He's been at the game for quite some time. You're going to want a younger pair of eyes and ears to sound off.
Absolutely.
But strange decision. I thought Craig Lingard certainly leaves out his head held high.
Yeah, but the outstanding team in the Championship at the moment, I think, are Featherstone Rovers, who are really hitting form now.
And one last result from League One. North Wales Crusaders got back to winning ways, beating Coventry. And speaking of Coventry Bears, the Bear Necessities podcast host Dave Musson has penned a brand new book on the club. It's called Forward, Inside the Coventry Bears 20th Anniversary Season, and it charts the history of the Midlands club as well as discusses the future as well. And on Tuesday, I caught up with the author and I started off by asking Dave how the book came about.
Really, it just became really obvious to me, Ben, when last season started panning out. It was the Bears 20th anniversary season. I'm obviously involved in the club as their podcast co-host, and it was really the season opener, a friendly against Leeds Rhinos, who were then Super League champions. And the Bears put up a real good fight, and it was the first chance to see this new squad of Midlands players they'd put together. And it just felt like there was going to be a story to tell last year, and I really wanted to be that one to tell it. So I started making a few notes at that point, and it just continued and snowballed throughout the season, and here we are, sort of just over a year later and 50,000 words later, and I've got a book and it's ready to go.
I mean, how much research has gone into this book?
So the book itself is kind of part season diary and part sneak behind the scenes. So the season diary was very much just writing about each game from a fan's perspective and trying to pick up on some of the stories and just tell that story of the year as it happened. So a team that sort of started off getting to know each other and being on the wrong end of some big defeats and improving over the year and really finishing strongly. What I've done is broken up the season diary with interviews with some of the key members of the different Bears, so the Bears family, so volunteers and staff. And I think that's where a lot of the history of the club comes out. I mean, there was another book about the Bears a couple of years ago by James Oddie, which is a terrific read, and I'd highly recommend anyone interested in the Bears to check that out. And that probably goes a little deeper into the history of the club than my book does. But that was a really useful starting point in terms of talking to people like club president Ron Banks, who's been there from the start, and, you know, hearing all the amazing jobs he's done. He's pretty much done everything you could imagine at the club, apart from put a shirt on. And, you know, I spoke to our match day reporter, who got to know the club through a rugby ball hitting the bonnet of his car when he was just at a game as a fan, and it snowballed from there. So really, it was just I wanted to tell those stories, you know, and let people see what sort of people are involved in the club and what it's like to be an expansion team in 2019. So hopefully the history of the club comes out through the words of other people rather than me going down and researching everything and almost doing it as a historical piece, because that didn't appeal as much to me as a writer. I wanted it to feel like a story from within the camp all the way through, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, and it's an interesting snapshot of like you say, life of running an expansion rugby league side, especially this day and age as well. I mean, Coventry Bears, 20 years as a club, but the last 6 years or so has been in playing in League One, and you came in with a wave of other expansion sides. Some still exist, like Old Gold, and some sadly don't exist anymore, like Oxford. So it's an interesting snapshot in a way of discovering what the secret is, I suppose, with Coventry Bears, why they've lasted and seem to be prospering quite well at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think when it comes to the secret behind the success of the Coventry Bears, you can't look any further than Alan Robinson, the club's CEO and founder and owner. I mean, he is the beating heart of that club, and he's the reason it exists, and he's the reason that they still do the incredible work that they do now. You know, they're a club that have never been in debt. They're a club that are really careful with every single penny that they get from the RFL, and they go about things in the right way. They're really thoughtful in their planning. Everything is about sustainability and with a view to growing the game. So I mentioned earlier that the ethos of the in terms of the player recruitment last year really changed ahead of the 2018 season. And it was, you know, many expansion clubs, just because they need players to fill the team, you know, many expansion clubs will look to the more traditional heartland areas and maybe try and pick up players from there and rely on them travelling down for games and training. And the Bears have done that for a few years, but actually last year they thought, no, we want to have more of a Midlands feel to our club. And that was really driven by Alan and head coach Tom Sang and the rest of the coaching staff. So they looked more at the university's game, and pretty much the entire squad had a Midlands feel to it last year. It was Midlands based. And you saw the results on the pitch. You saw the fact that they could train more frequently with each other. And towards the second half of the season, that really came to fruition. So I don't think, you know, I don't think anyone at the club would suggest that what they've got right now is perfect, because they are still in the middle of the table in League One. But there's so much potential there, and they are very much going in the right direction. And that all comes back to the just the diligence of Alan Robinson and the people he's got around him, and just like I say, the really thoughtful planning and really thoughtful approach to how they want to build this club. You know, this isn't a race to the top in as few years as possible. This is about creating something that is part of the community in the Midlands for years and years to come. And, you know, they've done an amazing job in the first 20 years, but 20 years in sport is nothing. I mean, we're playing teams on a weekly basis. You've got hundreds of years of history. So, you know, we're still very much in the early stages of the Coventry Bears journey. And it's really exciting to think where they could go in the future.
And it's an interesting one, isn't it, Dave, with regards to expansion? Because obviously, you know, there's talk that next season we're going to have Ottawa, and the season after we're going to have New York. Can expansion still work in the UK, do you feel, outside of the Heartlands?
It's a really good question, Ben, and it's one that the game clearly hasn't worked out an answer to. You know, you mentioned earlier in the interview, you mentioned Old Goals at Oxford, and obviously they dropped out of League One with a view to coming back as Bristol in 2019, and obviously we've not seen that. And the further we move away from the 2013 World Cup, where it made a real impact on Bristol, as an example, and the further we move away from that without a team in Bristol to build on that, you worry about the potential of growing the game within the UK. But at the same time, the Bears are showing that they can do things, even at a point where seemingly all the funding for any support of rugby league in the Midlands is being pulled, and things like the Midlands Academy have not been able to survive. The Bears are still going about their business in a really strong way. The Scholars down in the capital are doing some great stuff, and there's definitely stuff happening in the amateur game that suggests there is life. The final chapter of the book, I've tried to offer a bit of some thoughts on expansion and just a bit of a reflection on what I feel about it from my few years as following the Bears as closely as I have, and I haven't really come up with a definitive answer. It's just a question that I don't think is going to be solved anytime soon. But you know, London Broncos are doing good things in Super League. I think that the sport needs to embrace expansion for it to survive, because we're at the point now where you look at the sport outside of the Heartlands and it is a bit of a minority sport. A few years ago, rugby league was competing with football and cricket and rugby union for eyeballs. Now it's kind of competing with darts and snooker and speedway. And you know, it's got so much potential. It's got so much appeal. And you have to think that the sensible way of going about it is to grow the game in the UK, but at the same time, allowing for these transatlantic things to happen, because that brings with it money, that brings with it marketing and sponsorship opportunities that potentially can be reinvested and help grow the game in the UK as well.
And last season was, it felt like a real shot in the arm for the club. There was obviously the Bradford Bulls match when Dave Wood and the Five Live podcast, they came down, didn't they, and recorded the show there. And Dave does the foreword in your book.
He does, yeah. I think the club really made an impression on him. He, you're right. He came down to experience the Bradford game, and he certainly had a good experience. And that was the second time in the space of 6 months that the Bears had broken their club record attendance. And even though the Bulls won quite convincingly on the pitch that day, that game was a real turning point for the Bears, because following that they went on and won four games back to back, and it really set the standards for the second half of the season. And yeah, to have someone like Dave Woods come and do an entire episode of his podcast and talk about the Bears being the blueprint for the future, that was worth thousands in terms of what that would have cost if we'd have hired a PR company to try and get us that coverage. It just goes to show that there is life in the sport outside of the Heartlands, and you only need to come to a club like the Bears, or you know, to London Scholars. They're pulling up trees this year. West Wales, North Wales, wherever, you know, there are amazing clubs out there doing amazing things. And it was wonderful to see someone like Dave would give up a day and come and experience it for himself, and then not be afraid to go back and tell the world about it afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to say, I mean, you've touched upon it already about how well Coventry have done this season. There is progression being made here by the Coventry Bears, and it must be exciting to see that progression being made year on year.
It's really exciting, Ben. And it's actually something, it's really satisfying, because towards the end of the book, one of the interviews I do is a sort of an at-length interview with head coach Tom Sang. And he talks about the fact that every year has basically been starting from scratch for him and his staff, because they've relied on these players travelling down from the north. They've all been in for 1 year, and then they've maybe done well in a Bears shirt and got a better offer closer to home. And he talked at the end of last season saying, you know, if we can keep 50%, 75% of this playing squad into 2019, it really transforms how we approach pre-season, because we don't need to work on getting the team to know each other and getting to know the calls. We can hammer them with fitness early on and really work on things from the start. And you know, they managed to keep a massive chunk of last year's players. And yeah, you've seen the results on the pitch right away. As you say, beat West Wales and beat Newcastle in the first two games. And they're much more competitive from a much earlier point in the season now. So I was talking to somebody about this at the weekend. As a sport, we're perhaps guilty of having a lot of people involved in the sport who always like to grumble about things and like to pick on the negatives and stuff. But as a Coventry Bears fan, I think it's really difficult to be anything other than positive, because what's not to enjoy about where the club have come from in the last 20 years and the direction they're heading in? You know, yes, we'll lose a few games, and we'll lose a few games by big scores, and nobody likes to see that, but it makes the wins all the more sweeter, and everybody involved in the club has bought into it and knows that we're onto a good thing here. And it's it's really exciting. You know, I think about what the next 5 and 10 years might offer as a Bears fan, and it's really tasty, and I can't wait for it to happen.
Dave Musson there, and I should say the book costs £10, that's plus delivery, and is available for pre-order until the 22nd of July as part of a crowdfunded independent publishing campaign. Head over to covbearspodcast.com/book, the link of which is available on the description to this podcast, and all profits for the book will be split between the Coventry Bears and Rugby League Cares. Just before we move on, just a quick mention for the Coventry Bears more generally. I was wrong what I said in that interview there. They've not been going in League One for 6 years. It's about 4 years. Mm. And therefore, their rise to prominence has actually been a lot more impressive than
well, they've had some really, they've had some really good performances this season, haven't they? And they seem to be, you know, slowly getting stronger, slowly building up. And obviously,
off the playoffs.
a bit disappointing to lose to North Wales Crusaders at the weekend. Although, you know, good to see the Crusaders getting another win. You know, some of these sides who haven't been going for that many years seem to be putting it together a little bit now. And, you know, in the long term, it'd be great to see Coventry rising up through the ranks, wouldn't it?
They've taken some heartland scalps along the way. And I think what's really impressive about what Coventry do is their use of the university system.
Yeah.
They've got Loughborough pretty close by, which is a pretty untapped source of players.
Well, that's where the Midland Academy was based, which sadly is no longer with us due to funding cuts. But
and they've got, I think they've got Elliot Hall playing at the back, or they used to, and Dante Molly Samuels has moved on to North Wales from there, and Jason Bass as well playing for York was with Coventry. I think that they're doing an excellent job.
They've got a good owner as well, like Swinton before them. Alan Robinson's a very, very shrewd operator.
Absolutely. And we were talking there about expansion, and we started the show talking about Liverpool. And obviously, you know, all eyes at the moment are on Ottawa and then New York. There is a question here about UK expansion. Can it work? And the slow, steady progression year on year that Coventry have done seems to be working. So can it work at places like Liverpool, Manchester, Birmingham?
Well, I think rugby league is a great game and should be popular everywhere. But it's just difficult to promote that idea, isn't it? There's a lot of resistance to rugby league in a way that there isn't resistance to other sports, and I'm never quite sure why that is. But I think we should be trying to spread the game outwards from its so-called heartland into the surrounding areas, you know. So, and that includes Liverpool, it includes Manchester. I was really disappointed actually when the RFL turned down Manchester Rangers coming into, you know, League One. I thought they would have been an excellent addition. But you know, we need to get a strategic approach headed by the RFL to generate more semi-professional clubs, you know, as we
operate with crowds of between 300 and 700, because there's this obsession that, you know, with the Toronto thing, we need crowds of 10,000 at these places. Mm. You don't necessarily need that many, and you can operate with a 20-year plan.
Well, I always, going back to commentary, I always look out for the Midlands clubs, because I grew up in Derbyshire, but when I was about 18 or 19, I spent a lot of time refereeing in the Midlands League, which is it's an interesting experience, because you're refereeing players playing for Coventry Dragons and Leamington Royals and Birmingham as well. And those players are all rugby union players that are playing rugby league when rugby union's not on. And so you're refereeing these players who don't know the rules. And you're when you penalise a player, you're explaining to them what they've done, because they just don't know. And that's the part of the problem with rugby league outside of the north, is just there's a lack of knowledge about the game, because it's not shown. Mm. We talked about it a few weeks ago with the Super League show, that it's only on in the north, and I think that's one of the big problems. Where I grew up, we just about got the Super League show, but only just. Anywhere further south from where I grew up, you can't get it, and no one knows about rugby league at all, and that's that's a sad fact.
And the other thing that's worth mentioning, actually, is just looking back at the Magic Weekend, how limited Sky's coverage was this year. You know, there was virtually no build-up. The programme on Saturday started only about 15 minutes before the kickoff started, and similarly on Sunday. It was as though, you know, Sky has sort of cut back on its coverage of what was initially an innovation, actually, partly for the benefit of Sky, so it could broadcast all the games. So, you know, it's sort of raises a few alarm bells for me about the future of Rugby League's contract with Sky.
Okie dokie. I feel like I should end with a bit of a more of a positive.
Oh, I'll end on a question mark on that.
Bunch. Okay, right. Well, that's really it for this week's show. I have got some positive things to talk about, actually, just before we go. Some matters arising. Firstly, I'll come to you because it involves Castleford. That attendance on Thursday night for the Featherstone match in the Women's Challenge Cup, 1,100.
Well, I think it's absolutely fantastic what the women's side are doing for Castleford. I think, well, they've been attractive because Cass are playing some brilliant rugby and they've signed some brilliant players, and all the tries that they're scoring are fantastic.
It's not just that, though. We did have Lindsay Anfield on a couple of weeks ago, and it's the social media stuff and what Castleford have done to...
But they've certainly put themselves out there on social media and shown that these players are skillful, they're strong, they're fast, and it's a brilliant game to watch.
Yeah. With the international game as well, we touched upon the Istanbul Congress that happened, and from that Congress, the European Federation's announced there is going to be a Women's European Championships in 2023, as well as a wheelchair tournament as well. Speaking of the international game, Whitehaven and Nigerian Rugby League, we had ABC on the show a month or two ago. They've entered a new partnership as well, so there's a pathway there for Nigerian Rugby League players to play in Cumbria. That'll be a bit of a cultural shock, I'm going to suggest.
Just a bit. I was going to say, interesting seeing in the NRL, Jaden Okumbor, the Nigerian guy, was holding his place for Canterbury until he got injured. So, you know...
But he has signed a long-term deal.
Yeah, he looks a very strong kid, doesn't he?
Well, I was going to just come to the NRL season just before we leave, Alex. I mean, it looks like South Sydney, Melbourne and the Roosters have got a bit of a lead up at the top, but it's odd to play for the rest of the places.
It is. And, of course, we're now coming into June. We're coming to Origin, the period, and... this next week there's only four games, as plenty of teams have buys, but the Origin squads have been announced and there's some really interesting players, and they're paying Haas as a 19-year-old who's only played 10 NRL games and he's going to be on the bench for New South Wales, and it's pretty astonishing really. But he deserves it. As a 19-year-old big forward, he's huge. I can't imagine him coming towards me and trying to tackle him. I wouldn't want to be a Maroons player, that's for sure.
No, the interesting thing in the NRL is Newcastle Knights are just playing so well, aren't they now?
Oh, absolutely.
They picked up a big win last week, didn't they?
Beat the Roosters. That's tremendous. Yeah.
Well, the fullback Kalen Ponga, who's been picked by Queensland, is just such a phenomenal, unbelievable talent, both in terms of his pace, his footwork, his skill with the ball. He's got everything.
He is the most remarkable natural sportsman, by the way. He was the under-13 golf champion of New Zealand. And before he signed to play rugby league, he was chased by the A-League football clubs. The Aussie rules clubs wanted him, and so did rugby union. They all offered him contracts, and he chose rugby league. He's probably the most all-round natural sportsman we've seen for many years, I would think. Which is quite remarkable.
I certainly think with Origin, New South Wales are the favourites. I think they won it last year, and they've still got some unbelievable young talents in there. Their spine of Tedesco, and then they've got Damien Cook, who's by far and away the best hooker in the competition. Nathan Cleary's kept his spot despite a poor season with Penrith so far, but he's still got that special talent, and Cody Walker's going to make his debut, and he's a real late bloomer. He only made his debut in the NRL at about 25. So... He's top scorer this year, and he's been playing really well.
Well, Alex, just before we go, it's time for any of the business, so I'll come to you first. I mean, it is coming up to Origin season now, so what coverage can we expect in League Express?
Well, exclusive and unbelievable coverage of the of the Origin and of course the NRL, which continues. Origin is unique. It's just an unbelievable game.
Queensland are a great example of the whole being greater than the sum of the parts. Very often, I mean, you've just said New South Wales got some great talent. Absolutely true. On paper, better than Queensland, no doubt about it. But every year, Queensland seem to perform above what you could reasonably expect when you look at their individual
players. It seems like they almost want it more. The word is intensity. There's a real intensity around it.
It means more for Queensland than it does for New South Wales, very often.
But I think that's been led by Cameron Smith, Jonathan Thurston, Cooper Cronk, Darren Lockyer, Greg Inglis, all those players that have played for so long have just created this dynasty around Queensland. It means a lot.
And just before we go, any other business from you, Aaron? Anything coming up in The Guardian or in League Express? Have you got anything?
No, it's still really early in the week. And you always ask me this, and I've got no idea.
I'm just after a spark. Just from you. What's
you're not going to get one from me, I'm afraid.
And Martin, there is a back chat this week as well, and...
Yeah, the people who are on it, obviously Matt Shaw's the chairman, but... he's got John Dutton, the boss of the World Cup 2021. He's got Richard Thewlis, the chief executive of Huddersfield Giants, and Greg Mulholland, who was an MP until not very long ago, and was the leader of the Parliamentary Rugby League Group. So it's apparently a really good show, and worth watching.
And I'm right in thinking we've got
Thursday
rugby league,
at 5 o'clock.
We have got a Rugby League World out shortly, have we?
Coming this weekend, Friday.
And the editor, Matt Shaw, was on the Anfield pitch, wasn't he, playing for the LDRL, Leeds Rhinos side. And how did he do? Well, they showed it on Sky Sports, and they showed him coming across to make a tackle, completely missing, and the Tigers player scored in the corner.
Unless he's got a table tennis racket in his hand, he's not really the same.
Well, no.
I don't think he covered himself in glory, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Well, that's...
Maybe that's why he's not here today.
Address your complaint to League Express, Matthew. I'm sure you know the address. That's the end for this week's Total Rugby League show. Matt Sadler, a big thank you for joining us. Aaron Barrett, big thank you for joining us, and thanks for the review on iTunes.
Fiver to my dad.
and Alex Davis, thank you for joining us as well.
No problem,
and wherever you're going this weekend, make sure you have fun. Bye bye.